From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Nellie Mackay performs some original songs on piano and ukulele, the kind of songs described in the Washington Post as ultra-witty Broadway punk jazz piano songs. She'll also do a couple of pop and jazz standards and a song from the Three Penny Opera. She played Polly Peachum in last year's production of the Brecht Viall Show that also starred Alan Cumming and Cyndi Lauper. Mackay has a new CD called Obligatory Villagers. Our critic at large, John Powers, isn't a fashionista, but he loves Project Runway. He'll tell us why. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We know a lot of our listeners are on their way to their holiday destinations, so we wanted today's show to be entertaining, and here's what we came up with: a performance by songwriter, singer, and pianist Nellie Mackay. A New York Times Magazine article about her was headlined, "An Alt Cabaret Diva." In the LA Times, she was described as exploring modern life through music rooted in the pop styles of Cole Porter and Billie Holiday. But that very true quote leaves out the influence of rap on her music. She writes a lot of her own songs, but as we'll hear, also performs some jazz and pop standards. Her original plan was to be a jazz singer. Last year, she played Polly Peachum in the production of the Three Penny Opera that also starred Alan Cumming and Cyndi Lauper. Mackay will do a song from that show for us later. Nellie Mackay has released her third album. It's called Obligatory Villagers. Nellie Mackay, welcome to Fresh Air. You've brought your ukulele with you, so let's start with a song. And how about you open with the song that opens your new CD, Mother of Pearl?
Thank you, Terry. Feminists don't have a sense of humor. Feminists just want to be alone. Ooh, 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 ooh. Feminists spread vicious lies and rumor. They have a tumor on their funny bone. They say child molestation isn't funny. Rape and degradation's just a crime. Lighten up, ladies, rampant prostitution, sex for money. What's wrong with that? Can't these chicks do anything but whine? Dance break. Kucinich, and I approved this message.
Oh, bravo. That was great. That's really fun. And that's Nellie Mackay playing a song from her new CD. And the CD is called Obligatory Villagers. That song kind of sums up just some of the things I like about you. I mean, it's really funny and trenchant. And you have a beautiful voice. And you're singing about a very contemporary set of themes here. But the style of music that you're playing, I mean, it was almost vaudevillian, like tap dancing. So you're bringing together these different eras musically and lyrically.
Oh, well, thank you. I think there are nice things about every era. I wish we could just take the nice things.
How are you exposed to like the vaudevillian style of music that is that you were just playing?
Oh, I love, but basically I like music by dead people.
And have you learned about it like through movies and records?
Oh yeah, I've got a lot of records. It's fun at moving time. They're so heavy.
Yes, yes, I know.
But
particularly vinyl, yes.
Yeah, but no, I'm very attached. I think there is a tendency to romanticize the past, but I do think a lot has deteriorated, say, just in the past century.
No, in the song we just heard about feminism, I mean, do you consider yourself a feminist?
Well, yes, but I also know I'm a hypocrite, but not just in regards to feminism, in regards to everything. I think that's it's unavoidable, but at the same time you try your best to reconcile your belief system with your actions.
What makes you a hypocrite? A hypocrite in terms of feminism?
A hypocrite. I like a
hypocrite. Yes.
Yeah. It's that political ideal and the personal reality. For instance, even having a career, and being ambitious in that way is kind of, it's a capitalist ethos. It's not a all for all mentality. There's a lot of me there, and maybe you want to be big so then you can spread your communist message, but that in itself is a contradiction.
One of the most quoted lines about you is from Blender, in which you were described as indie musical comedy. Do you see yourself as being somewhere in between music and theater?
I don't know. I just did a theater thing the other night, and I was discussing with my mother about how we don't get the appeal of it. So maybe I'm the wrong person to be representing the theater. We'd much rather go see a bad movie. I certainly like mixing it up.
Well, speaking of movies, you've made a movie that's going to be coming out in December, did you say?
That's right, yes.
And the movie's called P.S. I Love You, and that's also the name of a great song that I know was popular during World War II. So do you get to sing it in the film?
I gave the song out as a cast present, and when the director said he wanted to use it in the film, my mother said, "Oh, I bet that means he's cutting all your scenes." And that was a big joke. That was very funny. Then we went to a screening, and he'd cut all my scenes. So I'm glad they're at least using the music in the movie.
So would you do the song for us?
I'd love to.
Now refresh my memory. Who wrote P.S. I Love You?
Yeah, it's Johnny Mercer and someone. I'm afraid I don't know. Maybe you can find it. Dear, I thought I'd drop a line. The weather's cool, the folks are fine. I'm in bed each night at night. P.S. I love you. Yesterday we had some rain, but all in all, I can't complain. Was it dusty on the train? P.S. I love you. Right to the Browns, just as soon as you're able, they came around to call. I burned a hole in the dining room table. Let me see, I guess that's all. Nothing left to tell you, dear, except each day seems like a year. Every night I'm thinking of you. P.S. I love you.
That's great. That's Nellie Mackay singing P.S. I Love You. And by the way, our producer Googled the song to find out the composers while Nellie was performing. And it's Johnny Mercer and Gordon Jenkins who wrote the song. Now, you said that you gave the director of the song your recording of it, and he ended up using you singing it in the film. Is the movie named after the song? Did the director not know the song?
Well, I believe it's just a popular conceit. I'm not sure if he knew that song. I think most people know the Beatles song.
They know the Beatles
song, which is of the same title.
Right. And how did you know this song?
Oh, I've always loved this song. Gee, I don't know. Maybe I've heard it first in an old movie, but I've just always adored it. I love just some of the ideas that some of the great standards came from. That, you know, I mean, it's just it's a terrific conceit for a song.
My guest is Nellie Mackay. Her new CD is called Obligatory Villagers. More music and conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is singer, songwriter, and musician Nellie Mackay. She's performing for us. Her new CD is called Obligatory Villagers. You know, you are now considered indie rock, but you study jazz singing, and it's clear that you have a great jazz feeling when you sing. But you gave up pursuing that path as a jazz singer. You left school, I think it was the Manhattan Institute of Music where you were studying.
Well, some refer to it as the Manhattan Pool of Mucus, but that does not and does not reflect my feelings on a lot of the teachers that work there. It's just, you know, the institutions of higher learning themselves are always suspect.
But why did you depart from the path of jazz singing?
Oh, well, you know, I think I torture the audience at my shows a fair bit with my warped renditions of popular standards. But actually, we were going to record a standards album, but I've decided it isn't worth the trouble.
Why? I'd listen.
Well, I'm glad. But it's just those standards. You have to be in a... I don't know. I find it hard to temper, you know, those beautiful melodies with my essential Larry Davidness.
Well, you took a song where there's something like so sweet about some of the standards from, say, like the 20s and 30s, and you wrote a song that was on your first album that's kind of in the manner of those songs about, you know, getting married, having a little white house at the end of Honeymoon Lane, that kind of song. But your version of it is all of the things that have become cliches and for you probably undesirable in some way, or at least that version of it is undesirable. And the song I'm thinking of, I think I've not done a very good job of describing it, but the song I'm thinking of is I Want to Get Married. It just seems to me like your take on a certain kind of standard that you don't feel like you could really sing honestly.
Oh no! I'm sure I will fall again and be able to sing them honestly again. But at this moment, there's a certain breeziness that preempts a maudlin rendition. I've been doing very maudlin renditions, but now I'm breezy. I'm like Ellen DeGeneres when she talks about walking around in a hospital gown. I'm flap, flap, flapping in the breeze.
Do you want to do a few bars of I Want to Get Married?
Yes. Yes, I need a spouse. I want a nice Leave It to Beaverish golden retriever and a little white house. I want to get married. I need to cook meals. for my Brady Bunches than read Danielle Steele. I wanna escape this red race I've created. I'm feeling enervated. I don't care if I make it, I just want to bake a sugar cake for you to take to work in the morn. And I'll stay home cleaning the dishes and keeping your wishes all warm.
It's Nellie Mackay. What were you thinking when you wrote the song? What were you thinking about?
Well, it was a lament. You know, I wanted to get married, I realized no matter what you want, it's kind of a fantasy.
So my take on it was all wrong. It wasn't your shout out and critique of standards from the 20s and 30s.
No, but I mean, you can criticize something you strive for, and you can avoid something you dream about.
Now, you were born in London, moved to New York when you were two with your mother after your parents separated, but you spent your high school years in the Poconos, and there's a really interesting jazz scene there. Phil Woods lives there, Bob Dureau, the singer-songwriter and pianist, and a whole bunch of other musicians. And Bob Dureau is on your new CD. Were you, as a teenager, did you know the people in that scene from there?
I did. I used to bug them when I was in high school, and now I've come back to underpay them. So I think they're all grateful to have made my acquaintance. And they're just a bunch of pussycats. But I'm serious about underpaying them. I do intend to do better next time. It's just the career ain't going so well, you know, Terry?
So when you were in high school and you knew Phil Woods and you knew Bob Dureau, were you thinking then that you would be a jazz singer? Were you thinking then that you'd be writing your own songs?
No, I've always looked for the easy way out, and singing other people's songs seems easier, but it just didn't happen for me. So you know, we're stuck here in this cesspool of bad poetry.
I want to play a track from your new CD, and this is called Oversure, and it features Bob Dureau.
In this case, I should say bad orchestrations then, as well as bad poetry.
I was going to ask if you did the orchestration for this. I think
yes,
it's quite
I
good.
Did.
Oh, I really
liked it. And I said they were bad. You knew I'd done them. Yes. Okay.
Well, I knew you wouldn't be insulting anybody else. So anyways, the orchestration's really, really good. So it starts as, you know, with this instrumental opening, and then we'll hear my guest Nellie Mackay and then Bob Dureau. And this is from her new album, Obligatory Villagers.
Have you got got some spine? Have you got something to begin with? Or are you innocent, witch? Have you got some nerve? Have you got some verve? Have you got something to depend on? Or do you fend or bend on? And if you say no, do you mean to go down below the earth with nothing? Now you got my name and you got my fame. Have you got something to remind you of who you used to be? That won't come true. Good news for those who pine away, the day comes shining through.
Kittens high-hatting, sitting on satin with a host who's catnip fond. For those who seize the day, the way is paved beyond.
I didn't know the world was like this. If I'd have known, then I'd be psychic. If I had a clue, then maybe I'd be blue as a mockingbird. Why do you think she laughs so much?
I didn't know I had such problems. If I'd have known, then I'd have solved them. But looking down the road, the Oklahoma toad's beckoning to me.
Nellie Mackay will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from the dairy farm families who own Cabot Creamery, five generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont at cabotcheese.coop. From Ann and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative, involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching at breakthroughcollaborative.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, Nellie Mackay performs a song from the Three Penny Opera. Last year, she co-starred in a production with Alan Cumming and Cyndi Lauper. And critic at large John Powers tells us why he loves Project Runway.
Wake up in a small cafe, sweatshop in the sunshine, set sail and you're far away, never using force. Cold coffee or Cabernet, brick hop in the daydream, shoe drops and you're bound to pay, gotta stay the course. You just want to get, you don't want to give. You may forget, but you'll never forgive. And what is the point of living that live if they're stealing your cup of joe? It's a slick sham, hot damn, you wind up in a toe jam. You better scram fast, Sam, the quicksand's getting close. I'll say it again if you will.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with singer, songwriter, and pianist Nellie Mackay. She set out to be a jazz singer, but instead developed her own style of songwriting and singing that draws on jazz and pop from the 1920s on and hip-hop. Her latest CD is called Obligatory Villagers.
It seems to me you have like a really pretty voice, but in your songs you usually don't want to be pretty. I mean, you're often saying pretty cutting things in your lyrics. And I think it's just a really interesting paradox of who you are as a performer, that there's this like beauty in what you're capable of doing, which you sometimes intentionally undercut by what you sing about. I'm going to ask you to do a few bars of a song called Manhattan Avenue. This is also from your first album. And this is an example of what I mean. I mean, it sounds like really pretty, but if you listen to the lyrics
you know, it's not so pretty. Can you tell the story behind the song before you play it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that, I mean, I had a lovely, childhood, but there, you still see a lot of things, you
and
know.
And this is a period when you were living in New York City, I think in Harlem?
That's right, that's right, in Harlem. And, you know, there was a lot of beauty there. The older people in the building, well, even they had some problems. I mean, Lionel, there's a man named Lionel in the song. He did kind of guard over the building, but he also eventually got evicted for having too many prostitutes in his apartment. We had some good friends in the building that we kept in touch with a while, and not much education, you know. I mean, and you can see that in the Christmas cards, but that makes them all the more poignant. Just in it, when it's harder for them to do something, and yet they do a more beautiful job than people who have all the privilege in the world. We got a lot of our cats from the alley next door, and the older women, especially in our neighborhood, would put out food for the cats and for the pigeons. And yet largely the young men would sick their pit bulls on them. And my mother once saw a cat's throat torn out in front of her by a pit bull. And this was a cat we had. We were probably going to adopt. So a lot of mixed messages.
And you mentioned the pit bulls in this lovely melody.
yeah.
And this is Manhattan Avenue. Why don't you play it for us?
Send a breeze, a pit bull's yell, a tender squeeze, a cry for help. Make it now and make it fast. Such memories can never last. I long for the days, music and mayhem. Mama's a smiling friend in the scuzzy hue of the streetlight, Manhattan Avenue. Lionel, please watch or outdoor. The children tease, I beg for more. Chip and paint, the ceiling's spent. Oh, ain't it great? Can't make the rent. I long for the days kittens are meowing, junkies are prowling deep in the jazzy hue of the streetlight, Manhattan Avenue. What strange advice that a mugger and a child should share the same paradise. Oh, but dreams come true on Manhattan Avenue.
That's Nellie McKay performing her song Manhattan Avenue. You mentioned a mugger in that last line. Is there a specific mugger that you're thinking of in that line?
Oh, I am. Yeah. I want to say hi to my mugger if I'm listening. If he's listening. I'm sorry. I want to say hello. I want to give a shout out because he only spent about, I think, a year in the joint, and then he got out and he was looking for us, but we were breaking down somewhere in South Dakota, so he couldn't get us again. Yeah, he came by and he said, "Give me the oop money or I'll oop the kid up," and we just laughed. We thought he was a friend of ours, and then he kept saying it, and then we figured out, oh, he wasn't a friend of ours. But then My mother, being as swift and ruthless as she is, she didn't even toss him her real wallet. She tossed him her dummy wallet. And then, and so all he got was $2 and a couple of bad credit cards that had no money on them anyway. And then he took off sauntering down the street, and my mom was yelling after him, "Yeah, you better run. You better run." I don't know if he did start to run. And then we got him in a lineup. But then we were beginning to think maybe it's time to leave New York.
Your mother carried around a dummy wallet for muggers?
Oh, yeah. But I think, for those listening, it's probably gone up from $2 now. you should always account for inflation.
No, we've been talking about the many different influences in your music. You recently did music theater in one of the greatest pieces of music theater ever written, the Threepenny Opera. There was a revival of it in New York with you and Cyndi Lauper and Alan Cumming. And tell us, like, what part you played and which songs you got to sing in it.
Oh, I played the part of Polly Peachum, and I got to sing, incredible music that you can't live up to, including Pirate Jenny, Barbara's Song, the Jealousy duet with Lucy, who was played by Brian Charles Rooney, and that was really fun every night, and some others.
Well, I'm going to ask you to do a song from the Threepenny Opera, if you wouldn't mind. And how about Pirate Jenny? And I should say that I know that you're not used to performing this song solo at the piano, and I'm grateful that you're willing to do it for us.
Yes, I would love to. We'll just be winging it here, but that's great.
Okay.
My good friends, you have seen me washing glasses, pouring drinks, making beds, mending pipes that are leaking. And you give me a tip, and I nicely wish you well. And you see me badly dressed in this filthy old hotel, and you don't know to whom you're speaking. And you don't know to whom you're speaking. But one evening soon you'll hear a screaming in the harbor, and you'll all be asking, "What is that?" And you'll see me slowly stir a cocktail, and you'll say, "Why, she's smiling like a cat." And a ship, the Black Freighter, 50 guns on the deck, will glide up towards the pier. And 100 strong men will alight before noon, and they'll run through the shadows by the hill. Citizen, whoever they may be, and they'll tie them all up, and they'll bring them to me, and they'll ask me, "Well, which one should we kill?" And they'll ask me, "Well, which one should we kill?" Over the great harbor, a deep silence will fall as I ponder who will have to die. All of them. And when the heads are cut off, I'll say, "Hoopla!" And the ship, the Black Freighter, 50 guns on the deck, will carry me away.
Oh, wow. Nelly Mackay singing a song from the Threepenny Opera, which she starred in the recent revival along with Cyndi Lauper and Alan Cumming. That shows, like, yet another side of you. Did you have to learn to do things you hadn't quite done before for the show?
No. You just fake everything.
That's words to live by.
Yes.
I think you're singing in a slightly different voice there than you usually do on your albums.
Yeah, the high mm-hmm. high register, the mm-hmm. Deanna Durbin key.
Some of our listeners might have had the same sensation listening to the songs that I did, which is that the lyrics didn't quite sound familiar, even though we know the songs. And that's because the libretto was rewritten, retranslated by Wallace Shawn for this production.
Yeah, well, that was taken. That last one had a few liberties taken by myself as well. But Wally's a lot of fun.
Had you known the songs from Threepenny Opera before you performed in it?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, and they're beautiful. And even if people don't recognize, you know, exactly where they came from, they're so far ahead of their time, and they still have yet to be matched in so many ways. That just the sound of them, that those vile chords and what Bertolt Brecht was saying is as fresh today as it was when it was written, if not fresher, in spite of what certain snotty critics may have had to say about Bertolt Brecht.
My guest is Nellie Mackay. Her new CD is called Obligatory Villagers. More music and conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is singer, songwriter, and musician Nellie Mackay. Her new CD is called Obligatory Villagers. Nellie Mackay, you've been performing some songs for us, and I've been choosing all the songs that you've been performing. So let me ask you to choose one for us and tell us why you've chosen it.
Thank you. This is called The Broadway Melody by Arthur Freed and Nacio Herb Brown. And, I just love it. I just love it. I just love it so much, Terry. So I just want you to know as I sing this song, I really love singing this song. Even if I don't sing it very well, I really love it. Don't bring a frown to old Broadway. You've got to plow on Broadway. Your troubles there are out of style for Broadway. Wears a smile. A million lights, they flicker there. A million hearts beat quicker there. No skies of gray on the great white way. That's the Broadway mellow, Broadway mellow, Broadway
I was totally unprepared for that voice. Where did that voice come from?
Oh, I just love it. Oh, too many reel-to-reels, I think.
And that song's from one of the Broadway Melody movies from, what, the late 20s or early 30s or 35 or something?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's from the Broadway Melody, and it has such great performances in it. It also has You Were Meant for Me was debuted in that movie, and it Anita Page stars in it, and she's one of the last silent film stars living. And if you can get her on your show, you should.
How often do you use that high, very vibrato-y voice?
Well, at least once a show, unless the audience is being nasty, and then I use it many, many times.
Is that your idea of retribution?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, they run from the room, but the drinks go faster, and the waiters like that.
Now, is the voice that you just sang in your more legit trained voice from vocal studies, or is that like a voice that you just started doing on your own? Because it's so different from like the voice that you use on your albums.
Oh, I'd like to think that's the real me. That's how I'd like to feel inside all the time, is kind of drifting by on a cloud, singing really high.
Okay.
With the pigeons in the sky. I love pigeons.
Some people might be aware of the fact that, your first album was on Columbia. Your second album was supposed to be released by Columbia, but there was some kind of dispute at the end between you and them about you wanted to have a double CD. They apparently didn't want it to be that long, and I'm sure there were other things in the mix that I don't know about, but anyways, you parted ways. What impact has that had on you in terms of music and in terms of like money and career path?
Oh, Jesus, all have deteriorated since my split with Columbia. They were my greatest inspiration, and I didn't appreciate them. And frankly, if I don't, you know, honestly, it's weird. I don't even really remember that. That's a good thing about life, you know, is old pain is always replaced by a new pain. So there's, you know, was there some problem with Columbia? Because it isn't even coming to mind. But if I apparently there was, and we parted ways, and, you know, I'm sure we're all happier for it.
We opened with the first song from your new CD. Do you want to close by performing the last song on the CD, Zombie?
I'd love to, yes, thank you.
Introduce it for us. Tell us something about it.
Oh, for any zombies that may be listening, this one's for you. Should you plan to travel way down south? A woman to woman, I gotta tell you about a curse that rolls out of the deep green swamp. It all is murder, and it makes you jump, and then it says, do the zombie. Do the zombie, whoa, yeah. Do the zombie. Do the zombie, whoa, yeah. When I was younger, just a little girl, Lennon glasses and a ponytail, my mama told me, honey, pack your trunk, we're going to Mississippi, do the bayou bump, where they say, do the zombie, rah, 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 do the zombie, whoa, yeah, rah, 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 do the zombie, rah, rah, do the zombie, whoa, yeah. One day I set out for a walk. The path soon grew quite dark. I saw my shadow running faster. Hurry, slow-mo, coming after me. After me. And it said, I do the zombie. I do the zombie, whoa, yeah. I do the zombie, whoa, yeah. The sun is shining and you're feeling fine. As you pass the Mason Dixon line, the forest echoes and the tree leaves snap. Hey, what's that sound? Spin around. Who dat? Then they say, do the zombie. I do the zombie, whoa, yeah. I do the zombie. I do the zombie. Whoa, 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 whoa. Bob Dylan. The zombie. What do we do there? What do we feel? Come on. Torture's no big deal. Do the zombie. I do the zombie. Morrissey zombie, I'm very depressed, but go vegetarian. Go vegetarian, everyone. Do the zombie, whoa, yeah. I didn't do how far are we? What is the they don't hear them. I don't see them. They just hate us. For our freedom! Elizabeth Taylor zombie! Oh, Montgomery, how come you're so gay? Wow, must escape the vicious nexus. Wonder what Brecht ate for breakfast. See the dinosaur! See the USA in your Chevrolet! America is the greatest land of all.
Mwah! Nellie McKay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tara. It was a real pleasure.
Nellie McKay's new CD is called Obligatory Villagers. Our critic at large, John Powers, is a fan of Project Runway. Coming up, we'll find out why. This is Fresh Air. The popular Bravo TV program about fashion, Project Runway, began its fourth season last Wednesday night. Our critic at large, John Powers, is a big fan and says that this is one reality TV show about something more interesting than forcing its contestants to eat bugs.
Like much of America, I've put in my time watching reality TV. I've watched gray-haired couples swing over canyons on the Great Race. I've seen muscle men get voted off the many locations of Survivor. And I've loyally tuned into that juggernaut American Idol, where Clay Aiken's loss in season 2 prompted more public outcry than Al Gore's. These are all watchable shows, but if you ask me to name the program that's the most perfectly seductive, I'll tell you Project Runway. Its concept could hardly be simpler. The season starts with 15 aspiring fashion designers, and each week they're given a specific task. Make an outfit from objects found at a recycling plant, design a dress for a star to wear on the red carpet, or come up with something stylish to be modeled by your mother. At the end, their handiwork is displayed by runway models, after which the show's judges name that week's winner and they vote somebody off. By the end of the series, only one remains standing. Now, I realize that Project Runway sounds exactly like many other reality shows. It has the same Darwinian structure. Each week, a character becomes extinct. It has the usual shameless product placements. Every moment of the show is branded. And it has a host glinting with schadenfreude. She's German supermodel Heidi Klum, a woman not exactly crippled by compassion. Wooden in her line readings, Heidi only comes to life when she's giving that week's loser the kiss-off. If Klum were Project Runway's only face, I can't imagine that anyone would watch. But the show's presiding spirit is Tim Gunn, one of the genuinely original figures in our popular culture. An openly gay 54-year-old man, he's TV's most admirable father figure since Peter Gallagher's Sandy Cohen on The O.C. Slim, elegant, and self-contained, with a hint of some great wound in his past, Gunn watches over the contestants as they work, offering them criticism and encouragement. Rather than tear into his charges like a football coach, he encourages them with his famous catchphrase, "Make it work." Here in the season premiere, he gives advice to a puppeteer-turned-designer.
So, Elisa.
Yes?
Talk to me.
Well, I decided, since it was an expression of self, that I would start out first with something that I feel very akin to, which was the body shape, the form. So from the front, it's very clean, very clear, very lovely, but it's revealed in the back, having it all furled up, and so that it would actually come untangled as she walks and she moves.
Is that going to work?
In the past, when I've tried it, it's kind of worked.
This ending here, to me, seems really in opposition to the finish of this dress. Do you have to really be concerned with, did I take this as far as I needed to? All right, thank you.
While Gunn is the star, the show's true drama lies elsewhere. You start getting involved with the contestants. Many of them the kinds of new age women and flamboyant gay men who would never appear on scripted TV, except to be made fun of. Fashion designers tend to be a temperamental, opinionated lot. Taste, after all, is their business. And within a few weeks, they start bickering and feuding and generally behaving like high school kids. And we, as watchers, choose our favorites. What makes this tricky is the cruel truth that there's no correlation between virtue and talent, between having a pleasing personality and being a pleasing designer. In fact, the show invariably features at least one hugely gifted contestant who everyone hates because he's vain, boastful, and contemptuous of anyone, including the judges, who doesn't genuflect before his genius. Within 10 minutes, you could tell that this season's monster will be Christian, a cocky 21-year-old with the look and attitude of a squirrel that's been run over by a lawnmower. Christian is obnoxious, but he's also talented. So is everyone on Project Runway, especially this season. And what makes the program work is that it shows us the flowering of their creativity. Working under enormous constraints, the designers create an outfit from scratch every single week, often in a matter of hours. If I live forever, I couldn't make a dress out of plants. But the designers are always doing something like this, and at show's end, we get to discover how well they've done. Even after watching scads of episodes, I'm always fascinated by the climactic scene on the runway when I finally get to see how the clothes look on a human being. It's always a revelation. And that's the real appeal of the show. It's not about colorful characters clashing or about getting America to vote. It's much richer than that. More than any television program I've ever seen, Project Runway gives us a glimpse into the mystery of the creative process, how one overcomes noise, stress, and one's own personal flaws to produce something close to art.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue. You can download podcasts of our show by going to our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross. We all wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble and the Barnes & Noble Review, the new online literary magazine with reviews, interviews, and recommendations. And from Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world, on the web at kauffman.org. CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrell's Loose at 1-877-21-FRESH. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a studio performance of rock and roll hits from the 50s and 60s, sung in Spanish by Big Sandy with Los Straitjackets. Their latest CD, Rock en Español, pays tribute to Mexican cover versions of American and British hits. Join us for the next Fresh Air. Yo, no, no.